Agenda item six, 2011 Lands 2020 acquisition process. This is a briefing with Dave Bertel, Special Assistant to the Director's Office. Welcome, Dave. It's been a while since we've seen you.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. And my name is Dave Bertel, Special Assistant to the Director on Lands and Wildlife Issues. I'm sitting in here on this particular topic for Jennifer Kwan. You probably learned earlier that Director Anderson was at the WAFA, the Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agency meeting. That organization specifically invited Jennifer to come down and talk about the Discover Pass. And so the idea of other states are interested in our success, what we've learned, those things. So she's not here today, so I'm trying to fill in and pick up the pieces for her. This is a timely briefing because it is very early in the process. That's why we talk about these are the proposed acquisitions. It's prior to grant submittal. This is probably the earliest we've ever come before the commission. Many times along the way, we provide briefings, and certainly at the very end, it's the commission that makes the final decision on each individual land transaction. But the idea is let's have more policy eyes earlier, sooner, more thorough at the start to help shape what these projects are going to be as then they work their way through the pipeline. And the pipeline might be 2 or 3 years. There might be a project here that you might be excited about, you might be interested in. It may not show up as an individual acquisition that Dan Budd would bring before you until 2 or 3 years out, because again, we've yet to even put in for the grant yet in this case. But we're trying to do this so it has a better policy shape to it and feel to it. It also is helpful to staff, because a lot of times in the grant proposals, you don't want a whole lot of staff time on proposals that somewhere down the line you're going to say, I don't know if as a policy perspective we want to do that one or not. So let's not waste our time up front. Let's have the policy eyes early on the process so we can work our way through that. I also want to take you outside a little bit because it's been rainy, and I'll show you outside and I'll show you sunshine. All of our acquisitions and activities are based on the mission statement in two common drivers. One's the conservation value, and one's the recreation and commercial value. We're either doing something for the fish, wildlife, and habitat, or you'll also see some projects here that are, well, how do people gain access to those opportunities to enjoy the recreation? And we do these things, particularly the conservation side, in a variety of ways. We're just focusing on the real property management one today in this briefing, the acquisition part, but I don't want to lose sight that it's in the context of many other things that we do. In fact, Katie Knight was here earlier today talking about some of the land use planning assistance, activities in that category that are very important that we also do. So sometimes we get wrapped up in the acquisition scurry and issues, and we just don't want to forget that there's a lot of different things we do, but a piece of it is acquiring lands and doing that type of work. We've been acquiring lands as an agency since 1939. The first one was the Sinlahikan Wildlife Area. We're approaching the 75th anniversary of that in 2014, which is pretty noteworthy, the fact that we've been doing that, and it's built since then. And so it's been building in a variety of areas till today, where we have about 900,000 acres that we own or control statewide. And it's about 2% of the state, so it gives you a feel of the magnitude. We're certainly not the largest public agency. When I think of large, I think of DNR or Forest Service or National Park Service or others, but it's certainly a significant one. And some of those local areas were very active, and it's a very important part of those local economies and the environment that they deal with. We're open 365 days a year. It's often asked that when we buy land, do we close it down? And the answer is no. It would be very rare that we do that, a gate on fishing access because of issues with boats on the lake, or maybe it's a western pond turtle critical habitat acquisition that just can't tolerate the use in a particular time of the year. But basically, we're open to the public, and that when we believe that right from the start. And also, many of the grants that we pursue to get dollars to acquire land require us to be open to the public as well. So I just like to keep reinforcing that. 4 million visitors a year to your wildlife areas, which means that's a lot of recreation, that's a lot of activity in the local communities. And then there are the 700 boat ramps and launches that we have statewide. Many times when I'm talking to the generic public, not the hunters and fishers, because they know, but a lot of times I'll ask someone, do you know about the Department of Fish and Wildlife? And they don't. And I'll say, have you ever used a boat ramp? Oh, yeah, I use it all the time. But they haven't connected the dot. And those 700 sites are ours and are the public's and are a very important asset that we have. And we'll see that four of those come up in this list that we're going to be looking at to improve access as well. I put the Discover Pass logo there to remind me just one of the things that we often talk about and are concerned about, Commissioner Perry might forget about, but O&M of our lands is very significant. And as we look at acquiring these lands, how do we help ourselves in that realm? And I just wanted to mention a couple things that we're active in to a great degree. When we apply for these grants right from the start, we try to pursue the grants that also provide O&M. Now, they all don't, and we won't do that in all cases, but some of the mitigation grants, PR money, DJ dollars, those type of grants will allow you then to come back and also tap into those forums to get O&M dollars. And that's very important to us, and so given a chance, we want to pursue that. We're also working with the various grant sources, the RCO office, WWRP. Many times a grant won't allow O&M costs, but they will allow you to do some upfront items right at the initial purchase, fixing fence, surveying boundaries, initial weed work, some of those things that we haven't necessarily been doing, and also we're helping to push those grant sources to allow us to do that right at the start. Again, it's not O&M that goes on continuously, but are there some investments we can make up front that allows us to be better prepared and lower our O&M costs as we go forward from that? There are some state pots of money that we are going to be competing for. They're not listed here because they're not acquisitions, but there is within WWRP, there is restoration category and also a development category. Again, those aren't O&M, but they allow us to do improvements. It might be rehabbing a field. They're one-time investments, but we do those in the context about how do we do those to help us as we move forward into the future and lower our operating costs. And then finally, we have had opportunities to pursue wildlife state or general fund dollars for O&M, and the Discover Pass has been a modest success. I mean, we're not there yet, and you'll probably have briefings later, but we're a little less than half of what we had anticipated it would produce. But if we compare that to the vehicle use permit that was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, and we've already taken in over $600,000, it's still a significant increase during a tough economic time to help us with O&M. And that helps us on the O&M. It helps us with enforcement officers to go out there and help tell people the right and the wrong things to be doing. So overall, we've been trying to work with that. One thing that we've learned, and I've been along with Regional Director Beach over in Region 2, we've been spending quite a bit of time with Okanagan County, and we're learning from that. We meet with them about every 4, 5, 6 weeks. And one thing that has popped into on my screen, in my mind, is that there's a lot of shared values. So many times we focus on what we disagree, because we have disagreements. But as you keep going, it's like, you know, why don't we look for opportunities where we're both trying to do the same thing? And let's just set those other ones aside, because nobody wants to you don't need to argue those. And when we talk about things like protection of water, they want to keep water in the county. They want it to be used efficiently. They want to keep it there for their values. Well, those are our values, too. We want good use of water. What about outdoor recreation? Well, both local government and department wants outdoor recreation in a variety of ways. We want open space. We want working lands. When we talk about working lands, we're talking about timber harvest, ag. We're wanting to keep those things going, both based on the infrastructure that's provided in the local communities by lands that are doing that, but also on the lands that we acquire. And it helps us with that O&M need that I mentioned earlier, because where we have lands and we produce timber on that, that timber revenue comes back to take care of the lands that we own. So we want working lands, and we want that to be going on. Rural economies, if they're healthy, that helps us. So what we've been trying to do is, as we're looking at these acquisitions, as we look at the values and the interaction we want to have with the local government, let's keep focusing on these things, and where we have a choice, let's look for acquisitions, let's look for opportunities that leverage these common values rather than the differences. We also have the structure of state government and policy by the agency that directs us and gives us the authority. One authority that's not mentioned here, either by statute or by policy or procedure, are the appropriations. Appropriations, when they come out, really for us, it's in two categories. One are state dollars, and when the state budget comes out, that's a binding legal statute with a dollar amount, and also sometimes some specific direction. You will do this with that money. You won't do something else, perhaps. And there's also, that's the state dollar side of that. There's also federal authority. So anytime we go after a federal grant, Section 6, North American Wetland Conservation Act, any of those that we go after, then those are, you need authority for that as well. And so often in the budgets will be state authority to use a WWRP money and duck stamp, some of those state dollars that are common to us. But also we have to pursue and receive authority to spend federal dollars. And so both of those are often in the budget. Internally, as we're working on the project, we've developed, and this started in 2006, where we developed an internal review process. We call it a 2020 evaluation. And one of the things that we're trying to do there is to look at a little broader than just the specific property. I mean, what's the context of this acquisition? How do the local, what's the local government think about this? How does it fit into the rural economy? What about, what's the current land use? If it's currently in a somewhat a conservation oriented land use, what's our need for stepping in at that point? Often I tell folks, you know, we don't have a target to acquire acreage. It's we have a target to manage and conserve for open space. And if it's being done some other manner, we don't need to step in and do that. So that's why current land use is a question that we now ask that we didn't used to. Planning integration. How does it integrate with Growth Management Act that a county's doing? How does it integrate with our own species plans? So we're asking those questions, so we're not looking at an individual parcel to begin with. We're implementing by parcel, but we're looking at planning documents to set that. We try to figure out and look at O&M. What's it going to cost once we acquire this? Is there a garbage dump on it? Are there a lot of old cars? And if so, we're going to have to require the landowner to clean that up before we take that. Are there any hazards? And so we're making sure that that happens. And then lastly, we end up looking and saying, well, how does this fit any appropriate funding source? Because there are different funding sources. And internally, when we go through the 2020 process, it's like, oh, that's a nice riparian project. Where will that be most competitive? Let's talk to staff that have experience with those different categories. Let's talk with the grant source and say, well, how will this project fit versus this, so we can be competitive when we do that? All of those things we try to capture with the 2020 process. Also, there's an external review, and what we're trying to do is, again, have more dialogue up front with local communities, NGOs. We want the Fish and Wildlife Commission to be engaged at a policy level to say, okay, well, now I'm hearing about these 23 projects, and that's the number that you'll see here as we go forward. What about this one? What I'm not seeing one that I thought was on there, or maybe we shouldn't do this right now. Whatever those comments are, we're trying to get that early on so we can help shape that. And I'll mention it with more detail later as well, but we're also going public much earlier. Now, that's always with a website and an interactive way for people to give their comments about these early project ideas. It's always a delicate balance, because land acquisition really boils down to what does the individual landowner want to do. It's their choice. We don't condemn. It's always willing seller. They decide if they want to do a fee acquisition. They decide if they want to do a conservation easement. They decide if they want a life estate. They decide. So it's always difficult to say, well, how much public do we go when you're trying to balance those values of the individual? We have some landowners that, I don't care who you tell. I'm interested. Come talk to me. I don't care when you tell somebody. I don't care who it is. Yeah, about the other end of the scale, it might be, well, Dave, let's see what the numbers look like before I want my neighbor to know that I might be selling. Well, whoa, that's a wide range, and we have to honor that, but we're also a transparent public agency, and we have to do that as well. So we're trying to broaden and expand our opportunity to share and provide useful information to the public and policymakers to know where we're headed, but honor that individual situation as well. we work with a lot of partners, and partners mean a whole lot. Sometimes when you talk about partners, you think, well, that's where you get the money. And that's true with Fish and Wildlife Service and some of the big grant source. But partners in this day and age are so much more important than just the money. They're leveraging state dollars, their contacts, they're bringing science to the table. I mean, there's people here on here that know more about climate change and the impacts in a given area than we do. So partners are a very, very important component, and they end up being an important source of the actual funding. As we got started and we started working with staff, and again, the 2020 process, and just kind of setting the tone for this year, we put some filters on early on. We wanted everyone to recognize this isn't normal business this go around. And I want to back up just briefly. We usually do a 2020 once or twice a year, a review of potential acquisition projects. We try to do that in sync with the various grant sources. Typically, there's a two-year cycle for a lot of the state projects. WWRP is common for that and is a big driver. Usually the federal funding grants are once a year. But what's happened, particularly at the federal level, with the dynamics of the federal budget, what had been a pretty predictable system, sometimes we're actually putting in for the next year grant before we know whether we got the last year grant. And so that gets mixed up a little bit. But we try to do it, like I said, whenever there's in sync with a grant source. And in this case, this was the big cycle because it included the state projects involving WWRP, which is a big state-funded opportunity. So we said major considerations, folks, if you're thinking about a project out there, regions, and the regions have, they come from the regions, and they're reviewed, and they have to be approved at the regional director level. Be thinking about the budget outlook, less money, reduce grant funding levels. There may still be Section 6, there may still be WWRP, but don't put in 12 projects because it's not going to get funded. And in a tough economic time with reduced workforce, let's think about staff workloads. Excuse me, do we really want to be asking for 12 projects to be crafted and presented in PowerPoints when we know only two or three are going to get funded? So we said, let's make the list shorter. And then we said, well, and in doing it, making it shorter, what kind of criteria do we want to use? We established filters. And one of them was that, well, if we've got phased projects, we're partway in a project we've already committed to, okay, that's in. If we had a project that scored well but didn't quite get in the money last time, okay, let's bring that back. But to reinvent and bring forward brand new projects, let's be pretty limited on that. So those were some of the values that we plugged into that system. As a result, we ended up with, and again, these are project proposals. In some cases, the grants have not even been written yet, very early in the process. This map's going to be common here because this shows where the 23 projects are. That compares to the same cycle 2 years ago with WWRP involved. We had about 40 projects. So you can see we're down. It's not that the need's not out there, but we're forcing ourselves to be a little smaller, a little more conservative because of just limitations and recognizing the realities out there. We wanted to continue the phased projects. We also want to look for opportunities where they're adjacent or they're in holdings to our properties. Rather than reach out and start a new wildlife area, rather than to shotgun or scatter, and we usually don't do that, but some of our projects have, let's really try to bring it home and consolidate our land ownership rather than to spread it out larger. So that was a value that we had going into that. That helps us on our O&M as well. Thank you, Joe. And one thing I'll mention off of this map, Region 4 didn't end up with any projects, both by our filter system. But a key thing there was that in Region 4, as we looked at this, it's like, well, what's going on here? There's a lot of conservation issues, efforts that involve acquisition that we're not the point of. It doesn't mean that we're not a partner on many projects, but whether it's surfboard projects, whether it's tribal projects, county projects, Puget Sound Partnership, Department of Ecology, there's a lot of effort going on in Region 4. But there weren't any for this cycle that we're the point on, and so that's why those don't show up. Region 1. And my point here is just to kind of expose you to that there's 23, kind of the distribution of them. If some are familiar to you, there's going to be an opportunity, and I'll tell you later, we're going to have the interactive web is so you can click on one of these dots. And Jennifer's going to send that a direct link to the commission for the commission to provide comments, separate from the public one. But both the commission and the public are going to be able to go to that map I had just before, and they can choose one of those dots, click on it, and I'll show you a sample here. But there's going to be more information on these projects, a map, and more narrative. And then that's going to be followed with a questionnaire that you can actually fill out, and what do you think about the project, whatnot, and an open box for comments. We've never done this before, particularly this early. But that's where we're hoping if there's a hot button issue that we didn't recognize, well, we'll pick that up, and we'll see that early on. Three projects over in Region 1. One is a cooperative project with Spokane County, and that's right outside of Spokane on the Mica Peak project. And we're looking there. It has a number of the key there. It's a partnership. It ends up being, it's got moose habitat. It's also a popular area for recreation. And so, again, it probably repeated again, but the county partnership was important to us on that one. Both the Charlie Fork and the Mountain View are phased projects. Both of those have been before you. In fact, if you reflect back way to last year, I think in your December meeting, you approved the purchase of the first phase of Mountain View down in Soton County, and in fact we closed on that first phase that you approved yesterday, and now we're going back for additional money for that particular project. So those are the three that are in Region 1. I might mention, I do not anticipate that this list gets larger because we're early in the process. I don't see a surprise where, whoa, here's an important project we didn't make on the list. I do see that we could end up with this list as we finally get the application in. We might say, well, it's not going to score as well as we thought. Let's not do it. So it could get smaller. And again, that's the draft nature of this list. In Region 2, we've got two access sites that show up over on the left-hand side. One's on the Methow River and one's Dryden. Both of those have a lot of varied and local support for. There's the phases of the Methow and the Okanagan Smilkameen projects that we've had before and the commission has worked. Those are the ones that when I talk about routinely meeting with the Okanagan County Commission, how we're working through that, we've told them we're going forward with additional grants, and so we try to keep them up to speed. Ephrata Lake, we've purchased a shoreline piece of that, and this is an additional phase to that one. And then the Stamilt project, which is a major effort down out of Wenatchee, a lot of partners involved. We were invited into this conservation effort a number of years ago. It involves DNR, and involves the city of Wenatchee. It involves water districts. It's a pretty major effort there that we want to help out on where we can. In Region 3, we have a number of both access sites and landscape conservation efforts. On the far right, the Rattlesnake Mountain. That's a project that we received funding for before. We actually made an offer, and it was turned down by the owner at that time. Since then, I'm going to say it's been 4, 5, 6 years. Now the family is back saying they are interested, and it's next to the federal property. It's also next to our Rattlesnake Mountain, our Rattlesnake slope site. So we're going back and trying to see if that will score well and get some money for that particular project. Bighorn Yakima River Access is, as it says, an access site. It has some habitat riparian value as well along the Yakima River, but there's a piece there that's very important for a river access for fishermen and hunters and boaters and other people that wish to use that. Pine Canyon is a small inholding. Again, that's where the value of blocking up, it's got a high value for conservation because you don't want those inholdings to fragment or be a risk later on, but it also helps a lot with O&M because all of a sudden you don't have to fence out that inholding. You can do your landscape management across all those boundaries, so that becomes a very very important project for us. Heart of the Cascades, I was just talking to Commissioner Perry that Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, on our first phase of the Heart of the Cascades, they're recognizing us. We were instrumental in helping them break a million acres protected milestone, and at their annual meeting here at the end of this month, first part of February, they're going to recognize us and our partners on this. Again, many partners that are doing this, because this was very, very notable to them. Well, this is another phase of some of that work. And Cowichi Tayatin is one that we've had there going with a bunch of partners as well. Region 5 has four different projects. The two west side, west forest areas, one's near St. Helens, the other right on the north shore of Merrill Lake. The St. Helens one is an interesting one that we've long had an interest of in trying to pursue and where we can get the funding for it. There's a strip of property between our current wildlife area and the main road. And so it's a very awkward polygon that from a management standpoint, if we just use the road as our property boundary, it really helps a lot. And there's interest there by the timber company to sell that. And so it's like, oh, that would be a very nice project. Rock Creek is a project that's Yakima Tribe, counties, two or three different conservation organizations. It's associated with potential mitigation for some of the wind power projects and stuff. And so Regional Director Taylor has been working on that. And the Harms Road is a trailhead. It's a small piece of property, but it ties together. It creates a trailhead for the public to gain access to a trail, and it allows the trail to be longer as well. And then finally, in Region 6, really scattered throughout the region, there's a conservation, most likely a conservation easement project up on Chimicum Creek. And again, that's the landowner that makes that choice of how that plays out. Dungeness Estuary, there's a restoration need. We already own some properties in there, and this is a partnership with the county that's interested in that one. Aloha is a butterfly site on timber company property, and they're interested in selling that to us if we can obtain the money. And Willapa Bay is a continuation of a collection of partners that have been working down there, the Refuge, us, Cascade Land Conservancy, and I'll forget all the other two or three or four, but doing a broad array of work there. And the Chinook River is an access site down accessing the Columbia River. So that's very brief, just to expose you, almost just to tickle and tease you to say, oh, I want to follow up on this one or that one or whichever one. Or, I thought there was going to be a project over here. I didn't see it. I mean, that would be a value added, too, if when you're doing that. Our next steps is exposure to you, another group of policy eyes to say, okay, very early in the process, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? How's this feeling? Again, we're not here to look at individual projects yet. That'll come, or parcels, that'll come 2 or 3 years from now. But this is exposing what we're thinking, where we're headed for grant source applications in the months ahead. Some of these grants won't be due until almost summertime. So it tells us what that looks like. We're going to go out for public review, and we're just trying to do the work, and we want to have it nicely prepared when we go public. We're anticipating, certainly we would like your comments before the end of the month, but it'll be this month that we'll try to also be collecting public comments and hearing from as many people as we can about, at this level of understanding, what's working or what's not. Tell us the hot button issues. There is in March the State Land Acquisition Coordination Forum, and that's a formal body that where DNR, state parks, and us, we go there and we present. It forces us to coordinate with the other agencies. So if state parks is looking at a particular site, maybe in the same area, they're trying to get some access. We're there trying to get some access. Well, let's make sure we're talking to each other. That hopefully that's already occurred, but that's a forum for us to coordinate with those other agencies, and it's a public forum. So again, the public can look and say, "Oh, I didn't know you were doing that," or whatever their comments and values might be. We can understand that. And then as we get to the end of this month and we start seeing that, okay, all the right policy eyes have been on this, now it's time for staff to go forward, write up those good grant applications on the remaining projects that are on the list, and let's go out there and be as competitive as we can. And while we're writing those up, often we're working with local governments and partners. Many times they're part of the grant application, but let's keep talking to them even if they're not part of the grant application, so there's no surprises. They understand it, they're supporting it as much as they possibly can, and we've integrated with them their values. I wanted to go back now when we talked about creating the website. This is how, this is a draft. And I mentioned the Micah Peak proposal over in Region 1. And what we're going to have is that we'll put out a news release. We'll tell the public that, boy, we're sure looking for comments, and we'd like you to interact with us here. Go to this webpage and look at the map. And if you have interest on any of these projects that show up, on the click on it. And when you click on it, you'll get more information, certainly more than I know or I certainly shared today. But there'll be a map of the project. There'll be a narrative. There'll be more information there. To say what this project looks like. And then following that, there will be a questionnaire that, okay, so you had interest in Micah Peak, you got a little bit more information on it, maybe you learned that, well, it's not even one you're interested in, but if it is, you've got some thoughts or comments, jump right onto this questionnaire that immediately follows it and answer some questions. And then at the bottom, there will also be a box where you can, things that we didn't think of to ask you about, give us those thoughts too. And all of that will help us shape which projects we move forward. All of that will help us strengthen the project and eventually implement it on the ground. And I think with that, questions.
Very good.
I might just add, some of these, I do try to take you outside with the photos. Many of these are on your wildlife areas, and many of those were taken by Justin Haug, who is the assistant over on the Sinlahecan wildlife area. So when we need to do something on our wildlife areas, and some of these I needed to, Recreation and Conservation Funding Board met with the Okanagan County Commissioners, and I did a presentation. First thing I did was I went to Justin, because he's on the ground guy that takes great pictures, and many of these are your lands.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Beautiful. Commissioner Perry?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. Dave, you mentioned that you consider what's around the particular piece of property that you're focusing on, and I know sometimes the wildlife value, the habitat value, is intrinsic in the particular property, but it's also relative to what's around it. And do you consider things like the fact that there may be development around it, which would decrease the value of the particular of the property that you actually have? Do you go that far in terms of trying to evaluate what a particular property might be worth from a wildlife standpoint?
Yes, we do consider that. Often we talk about these as landscape efforts because the context or the setting of it. But part of that question also deals with, on an individual project, what you're trying to accomplish. Is it a site issue? Is it a peregrine eyrie that's very site specific? And if you have development but a short ways away, that might be okay. Or is it a migration corridor that a standalone 10 acres won't do a thing for you unless it's connected and meshed with the others. So an important part of that question deals with the individual project and what you're trying to do, but we try to consider that both in terms of the current development that's there today, but also the trends in that.
Okay. Another thing, this may be more of a policy issue and may have to be discussed, well, I assume it'll be discussed over quite a long period of time, but you mentioned that Department of Fish and Wildlife land is open 365 days a year to all recreation. I don't agree with that at all. Some value of some habitat is based on its isolation and freedom from disturbance. Year-round recreation of all sorts doesn't really fit our lands. I think that often lands we purchased in the distant past are now being surrounded by development of one sort or another, and even if that's not the case, I think fish and wildlife land tends to stand out on the landscape because it isn't developed and so forth, and people want to do things there that are maybe not wildlife-oriented and certainly not amenable to highest quality habitat. So where do you see us drawing the line there?
Very carefully. I think that is an important policy issue. I brought that up in the context that in some cases people get confused over, well, do we lock up our land? And we don't. And so I wanted to make that message. On the other end of the spectrum, there are times, like I mentioned, western pond turtles where we would. And so I think it's a very important policy issue for the commission, for the director, for the public to engage. Where do we draw? We want people to use our lands. I think that's a good value. But as soon as it crosses over and it's putting those lands, those conservation values at risk, then it's like, oh, wait a minute, we've got to do something different. So there's a balancing act there that we've got to do, and we have to recognize that. So to me, there's not a right, or the right answer is that we need to respect both of those values and figure out the right place.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think this, again, will be a long-term conversation, but I think it needs to be addressed with the increasing population in Washington and our decreasing habitat base, that the ability to manage our lands to provide best habitat has got to be the highest priority, and recreation has to be second. And in various situations, we're going to have some kind of policy guidelines on that, or we're going to lose the habitat values that we have out there.
And perhaps we started that discussion with the development of the land use regulations. I mean, that we ran into those kind of discussions and those philosophical discussions. And many times it's not closed or open, but it might be open, but how you can access it, whether you can drive there or use snowmobile. I mean, there's a lot of diversity, but you're right on point on that policy, those policy discussions that need to be worked out.
Okay, one last comment. I truly agree with the land purchase program. I think it's well done. I think with the 2020 process you outlined, there's a good way to evaluate all the factors and determine whether that really fits into the policy statement in terms of land purchase. But with each land purchase, unless we increase staff, and that's not likely to happen, we dilute the ability of the on-the-ground land managers to take care of it. And whether it's enhancement projects or just plain O&M in terms of weed control and signs and roads and whatever else needs to be done out there, we dilute the ability of the department to take care of the land that they have, and I think we need to address that more directly than we have in the past. I think we've been lucky in getting grants and so forth, as you pointed out, but that doesn't really take care of the basic O&M, and again, as we get more acres, that becomes more of a problem. So I think that's something we need to work on, and the sooner the better.
Commissioner Jennings?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Commissioner Perry, I'm on the same page with you as far as recreation, but actually what Dave said was that the lands are open for recreation 365 days a year, not for all types of recreation. So I just wanted to clarify that. And I do think that we are looking for our lands to be used for wildlife-related recreation. To reiterate your point, we are not looking for these lands to be used for all types of recreation. These are not open space lands. These are wildlife lands. And so the recreation and the use we want on them should be compatible with the wildlife values for which we purchase them.
Commissioner Duvia?
Thanks, Madam Chair. A couple questions, Dave. I enjoyed that presentation a lot. It helps us keep on top of this. But do we have any track record over the last 3 years, say, how many of our 2020 lists have we been successful on? And do we have a list of properties we bought that weren't on our 2020 list?
Yes and yes. I don't have that with me. I mean, there are projects. For example, our filter that we showed that I showed there of let's have short lists. That meant that there were projects that never came to us central office out of the regions, and so I know at least one north of Spokane that if we didn't have those filters, would have been on the list. So they're not handy lists. We could go back and recreate or give examples of projects that got dropped off through this process. And then your first part of the question is if it's...
Well, if we're identifying our top 2023
did
projects,
we get them?
Did we...
Again, that's not a list that is created now, but we'd be able to do that.
Yeah. We could be interested in seeing that in our future. Then
it would have. There would be two ways to demonstrate that. Number one is this is going after a grant for Okanagan Similkameen. We put that into the Section 6, which is U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We have been very, very, very nationally competitive in those grants. So we could show you that, okay, step number one, were we successful in getting the grant to start with? Yes. And then we could line up and say, well, and here are the parcels that were acquired with a particular grant. So in both cases, we could show a thread of, okay, here's one we said we're going to go after. Did we get the money, and did we buy some parcels? Here's one we said we were going to go after, never got the grant. Or, I mean, we could create something like that, or maybe use some examples of that in future presentations.
And the second question was, we keep talking, and Mr. Krishna Perry will never let us forget it. There's this operation and maintenance cost.
That's an issue with him?
I vaguely remember, but I think he brings it up once in a while. Is there a number that we have that is the total of our operation and maintenance, what it does cost us, and what our shortfall is?
I think if Jennifer was sitting here, she would probably know that off the top of her head. I know in dealing with the legislation to adopt the pass, then we had to present, I mean, you generally have to talk the problem statement and the magnitude of that, and then where we're currently funded. So there's estimates of cost, O&M needs per acre. That's out there. I don't have that off the top of my head, but Jennifer would, I think.
I know Dan tries to tell us what the cost is on on our projects, but I've never been able to be comfortable with, are we even? Are we upside down? Or
no.
Where are we on this?
We're behind, and that reinforces what Commissioner Perry says.
Yeah, and then are we behind $100 or $1 million?
And part of the answer to that I would know, and that is it depends on the site. I mean, as a whole, you could come up with
that's the one, just the whole.
Because you might have some mitigation-funded acquisitions that we're doing darn well as far as O&M, and we do some nice work with it. But then there's others that are way at the other end of the spectrum.
I would be more interested in knowing, and at the end of the day, are we
gaining on that?
Are we gaining on that problem?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Great.
Thank you.
Very good. Very helpful.